Coming to you live from deep within a wet and cloudy and very windy radioactive meme land. We are the survivors of the alt-right kekpocalypse, the few, the brave, the bitchy, once more wading into battle against the froggy hordes with Rant Zerker 98. Do beavers give a damn? No shit. We are going to be talking about an article in Catalyst, Feminism Theory Technoscience, called The Watershed Body, Transgressing Frontiers in Riverine Sciences, Planning Stochastic Multi-Species Worlds. Okay, with me today is the Cervidae of Cerulean Hue, Teal Deer, the Doge, iron-fisted but fair ruler of Venice, our long-range rhetorician, Dr. Ranrakam, and myself, your humble narrator of excellence, Allison Tiemann. If you want to continue to see these videos when YouTube drops the axe on this channel, or drops the axe, I don't know, or they get so far up their own ass when it comes to diversity that they start to expect their server engineers to collaborate with termites or something.
The guillotine of self-righteousness.
Yes, the guillotine. Well, but look at this paper that we're about to do. You really think it's that far-fetched that Google will be starting to look into species diversity? Here's a termite
Stochastic
mound.
Species diversity, no less.
Stochastic. Yo, here's a termite mound. Make it work with the mainframe, and then that's it. Anyway, if you want to continue to have access to our content, I suggest you go over to our central content server I have set up at badgerfeed.com and sign up for notifications or bookmark it, whatever. If you're listening to this as an unedited stream, if you want to continue to have access to all of our unedited verbal diarrhea like that, you're going to have to sign up at badgerfeed.com as well. Finally, this stream will not be gamified. I am doing 1 hour of this shit. That's it. Don't bother trying to pay for more. You're not getting it. I am not your fucking dancing monkey. During the after show, I'll be reading the first chapter of Professing Feminism, Cautionary Tales from the Strange World of Women's Studies by Daphne Patai and Loretta Cortez. So if you want to have access to that, go and put some money in the hat at feedthebadger.com. From there, you can choose to become a patron or the do-it-yourself option as well. So everyone, don your side stabilization devices to prevent your obliques achieving orbital speed. Or in other words, prepare to laugh till you puke, and let's begin. So should I just start reading? No
sure.
Preamble.
More I could just, do it, or whatever.
Who would be the funniest to read, Mike?
I just want to laugh kind of at the contradiction in their own title. Planning Stochastic.
Yeah, that was one. I was boggling at that one, too.
Yeah, it's like stochastic is just something that is random but may or may not form a pattern. How do you plan something random
that may or may not form a pattern?
Yeah, it's you don't. But you're planning a random multi-species world.
It's how do we make sure that we have no idea what we're doing?
Would this be like No Man's Sky, maybe?
I think so.
Because that was like, didn't they populate everything stochastically?
Yeah, everything was like randomly generated, but because computers suck at random, everything just kind of ended up as like a brown, dark green mess, and all of the animals were retarded.
They really were.
Do you think
T-Rexes that with like cow hooves? It's so stupid.
I'm so tempted to. Can I break out my harmonica and play the Jurassic Park?
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Can I even play that? I think the entire point is that it's terrible.
Oh, I want to hear this.
Something god-awful like that. If you can't guess, I can't play the harmonica for shit.
And yet that's still a better version than what No Man's Sky came up with, but...
Yep.
Okay, well, and I think that No Man's Sky is probably a better version of reality than what Cleo Wolf-Fell Erskine from the University of Washington is going to propose here.
Even her name sounds like she's an otherkin.
I know. Well, in this case, yeah, you start to wonder. So, does anybody want to volunteer to do the abstract? Who's the funniest reader?
Hold on.
You can't fucking say funny, because obviously you're going to point at me. You know it's supposed to be funny. Why don't you do it?
Okay, fine. I'll do it. Abstract.
Would you let me? Would you prefer if I just played this entire thing on the harmonica?
Actually, you know what? Just maybe some harmonica music behind me, my reading of the abstract might help me out here. But I'd have to see if I can actually read while hearing it. And I don't even know if you want to do that. You might have just been saying that in a humorous manner.
Well, it was either that or do it with a kazoo, because sometimes you can kind of tell what someone might be saying.
Oh, yeah. I see. So you want to read it with the harmonica. You want to... Okay, all right. In conversation with Eva Haywards. the temptation is to read to the music, which is probably going to make this even more ridiculous. Okay, in conversation with Eva Haywards' writing on transgender embodiment, this paper explores how beaver modify landscapes differently than human engineers, and how human engineering might be transformed through riverine collaborations with beavers.
Pause for effect?
Yes. Profound. The possibilities, my mind is exploding.
Well, I mean, maybe this person is just way smarter than us. I mean, they did put technoscience under catalyst, and we all know technoscience, that's a whole other type of science.
Yeah.
That's like wow science. That's like science TM science.
That's like...
science!
Science plus.
Yeah, science plus, that's right.
Considering the body variously as a body of water, a river which draws together all of the above, and underground water in a watershed, as like our own trans bodies, and as a slippery double for the psyche.
Okay, we got our first casualty. And as a slippery double for the psyche of an Anthropocene engineer. Julie Cole and I argued that thinking with beaver as stochastic transgressors against manifest destiny engineering projects settle down, could transfigure engineers' approaches to their work and river restoration more broadly. What if, rather than trapping beavers... beaver traps are gay. What if, rather than trapping beavers into service as ecosystem engineers, end quote, we assert that humans should engineer as beavers do, in ways that create porous boundaries between land and water, up and downstream by way of stick and mud leaky temporary dams, question mark?
Can I just interject briefly? Maybe because people could die?
I mean, we do build... I'll just finish. Here I theorize a transfigured watershed body through human beaver salmon encounters at... Oh, that's not the end. Oh, fuck.
At... This is reading like a Chuck Tingle without any of the sex.
I don't know. I mean, human beaver salmon encounters.
Oh, what
sounds
is
pretty
this?
Salacious to me.
At three salmon recovery sites in the Pacific West, a Karuk-led project on the Klamath River.
It's probably a native group, perhaps.
Sounds Canadian, doesn't it? Is this? Yeah.
No, it's from the University of Washington.
There are California-based Indian tribe.
Okay. On the Klamath River, agency-led beaver relocation projects in the Mitho and Yakima watershed, and a citizen science agency collaborative project in the beaverless Salmon Creek and Russian River watersheds. That's the saddest adjective I've ever heard.
Beaverless.
Who would ever want to be beaverless?
I love this. We're going to study human beaver salmon encounters by going somewhere that is beaverless. What could possibly go wrong?
Okay, should I try again?
Yeah, if you've got more in you.
I can. You're just more disciplined, my friend, because I can hear the laughter coming through. But you were able to keep it relatively even. I will give
we're up to all three stories. Go on. Take it away.
All three stories concern river and salmon recovery in the Pacific West, where either humans or beavers have initiated collaborative projects.
Mm-hmm.
to raise water tables, keep rivers from going dry, and improve salmon habitat. How do beavers initiate these collaborative projects? Do they send a memo? An email? Pick up a phone?
They probably invented dams before we did. We're just much better at dams.
Hey, Cleo. This is... Would you like to collaborate on constructing a salmon habitat? These scientists and local knowledge holders encounters. No, I gotta read that sentence again. Where either beavers or humans or beavers have initiated collaborative projects. She literally said beavers have initiated collaborative projects. I mean, maybe you could say beavers have initiated creating a dam. But a collaborative project with a human being?
Maybe that's not what she means. They've initiated collaborative projects between themselves. Between beaverkin. I mean.
I'm sorry. These scientists and local...
I'm just imagining a conversation of both of the foremen at that particular thing. Well, what we need to do, we need to get some of those steel beams into there, and then we're going to use about 200 tons of concrete just for the base.
Is that the sound beavers make?
I'm guessing so. Something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We should be packing in some of that.
Are you crazy? We can't possibly substitute steel for aluminium. It won't have the strength.
Jet fuel can't melt steel beams, you silly beaver.
Okay, these scientists and local knowledge holders' encounters with beavers in their ponds thick with salmon are inspiring them to change how they undertake habitat restoration projects, and also spurring some to reconsider the proper task of human ecologists and engineers into a mode inspired by beavers themselves.
So what you're saying is when you build a dam, put a salmon run next to it.
Or that beavers... There we go. Beavers, I guess, don't, for some reason, I guess salmon, because beaver dams are made out of wood and mud, salmon are able to navigate the beaver dam better than something that's six stories high made out of concrete and steel. It would suggest that maybe if they're going to rehabilitate areas that, I don't know, maybe take some lessons from the beavers. I think that this is where they're going.
It's like saying let's get back to mud huts because they had better insulation and you could rebuild them within hours. Which someone did actually say in an article quite recently. I forget where it was.
Well, you know, Earth,
I remember them
Earth...
saying at the end of Mars Attacks when everything was destroyed and the kid was like, we should all live in teepees instead of houses because it's better in a lot of ways. But he was just like this dumb kid that happened to survive, so I don't know. That's my contribution to this conversation.
I just don't understand why this has to be collaboration between human engineers and beavers. I mean, couldn't we be like, well, let's introduce some beavers into the environment if we want the positive effects of beavers to be felt by that environment. I don't understand where the collaboration comes in.
But Allison, don't you want to see an entire herd of beavers wearing tiny hard hats?
Actually, yes. I would love to see that.
The collaboration is necessary.
The collaboration. I could just see the. I can just see the.
I'm on board if they have little overalls and tool belts too.
Oh, definitely. We can't. We have to go all the way with this, and then we have to create a. We have to create a calendar. Otherwise, this collaboration, I just don't see any benefit in it. All right. Quote.
I do have to wonder if they're talking just about like building dams out of wood instead of like stuff that, you know, actually works. I'm guessing the person who authored this never heard the story of the three little pigs.
I mean, I'm trying to make sense out of something that's inherently senseless, but what I'm assuming is being said is that they're looking at how beavers impact the environment and saying, well, this is more beneficial to salmon, therefore let's approach dam building like beavers do. But oh, yeah, I see now. No, this won't work. Because human dams don't do the same things that beaver dams do. They do things like prevent people from dying.
And produce, like, electricity. Isn't it, like, hydroelectric is by far the safest, like, most efficient way of creating a power plant, right?
Hmm.
It's just there's not many of them we can actually build because we don't have many rivers that can do it.
Ironically, a group of beavers is not called a herd. It is called a sloth. Isn't that weird?
Sloth of beavers.
A sloth of beavers. And you'd think they were busy all the time.
All right. Then they're not busy beavers. They're slothly busy beavers. Okay, quote. I don't know what this is. Oh, this is a quote from the Under Commons.
It's a colony, not a sloth. A colony.
Harvey and Moten. This is from Harvey and Moten, the Under Commons Fugitive Planning and Black Study. What Black Study has to do with salmon reclamation is, well, let's find out. The plan in the Under Commons is to invent the means in a common experiment, launched from any kitchen, any back porch, any basement, any hall, any park bench, any impoverished party every night. This ongoing experiment with the informal carried out by and on the means of social reproduction as to come of the forms of life is what we mean by planning. Planning in the Under Commons is not an activity, not fishing or dancing or teaching or loving, but the ceaseless experiment with the futural presence of the forms of life that makes such activities possible. What relationship does this have with salmon conservation or human beaver dam construction collaborations? What? Why is this quote here? Okay, is this like a master's student? I remember what I had to do my thesis.
I think this is the hook. This is what they put in to make us keep reading. It's like, ooh, how on earth are they going to tie all this shit together?
Let's maybe go. You're right.
Yeah, this is an M. Night Shyamalan style academic paper.
Oh, okay. Introduction. The first time I touched a living beaver...
I was 18. She promised that this is how they all smell.
Before I knew it, I was fucking an entire sloth.
The first time I touched a living beaver was during the summer of... She must have realized
summer
that...
'69.
The summer of 2014. On a Columbia River tributary during an era of extinctions, loss, shock, reassessment, and disorientation that is coming to be called the Anthropocene. Oh, I get what they're saying. So this is the human-led extinction of animals, presumably. Presumably it's because of us. Well, I guess it probably is, but... I traveled there with Julie Cole, continuing years of scientific artistic... and political engagement with beaver salmon human worlds. How do you engage with salmon politically? I mean, beavers, yeah, I can sort of see, but salmon? Like,
you place a fatwa on him.
Oh, okay. Right.
You pronounced it salmon. I thought, no, not a lot of people would get that.
Salmon, yeah, roast. I got it. Very funny. Very good. Multi-layered pun there. But only now did we engage physically with the immediate lively heft and squirm and odor.
Whoa.
Seriously?
This might be a Poe, I don't know. When it comes to feminist papers, you never know. You never know.
Oh god, at this point
that
I'm
is
wondering...
the problem. You just can't tell, can you?
No. I can look at... I can look at where this came from. I'm really sorry, guys. This is sort of defeating me.
I can keep going. We're all taking turns anyway, so let's see. But only now did we engage physically with the immediate lively heft and squirm and odor of castor canadensis in the flesh. I guess the castor canadensis is like the scientific name for beaver, and this person is super duper smart and knows how to use Google. We helped relocate nuisance beavers to territories where people welcome them. Nuisance beavers? Badly behaved ones? With all their unpredictable land and water inventions.
From the bad side of the dam.
Interventions.
Interventions, yes. We were honored to pitch in and facilitate the beavers' never-ending projects. Beaver works, dams, lodges, canals, and free tree-felling projects... inevitably transgress private property lines, interrupt human irrigation and orchard schemes, and shift landscapes from fenceable pastures and tame drain fields to dynamic mosaics of thicket, meadow, water, bog, and woods.
All right, stop for a second. We were honored to pitch in and facilitate the Beaver's never-ending projects. So you, what did you do? Did you help them build their dams? Like, and they...
I'm guessing it was just the fact that they moved the beavers that helped them.
Okay,
that's what I'm getting from it. Okay, they moved them to a new place, and thus they were helped, and now they can do...
You know what?
They moved them somewhere beaverless.
Yeah,
I just learned that word today. I love it.
Okay, continue, Brian.
All right. We like thinking about how the beavers we met could be decolonizing the controlled territories of Manifest Destiny and how we might be helping them to do it.
Okay, you realize where your food comes from, right?
The salmon?
No, well, yeah, the salmon, but also the territories where people have, you know, have human irrigation, orchard schemes, and fenceable pastures, and tame drained fields. Like, this is what sustains our civilization.
It's just they're harping on about this Manifest Destiny thing, you know, the idea that, well, back in the day, that Murica and human civilization in Murica should go from coast to coast sort of thing. So I think they're just kind of like, yay, beavers are like destroying things that humans made, and that's good because we don't like what humans are doing and have done.
Yep.
Not sure if hippies or just typical Marxist feminist social justice warriors destroy it all because capitalism.
So they're making the argument that beavers destroy civilizations, but Black Pigeon Speaks already made a video about that, got into a lot of trouble. And wouldn't they indeed be agreeing with the thing that they tend to oppose? Beavers destroy civilizations.
And what is a dam? But
yes, I got that, Brian.
A dam is surely a slightly submerged wall. Do we like walls now, do we?
Well, let's ship those beavers off to, you know, southern Texas.
The dam just got 10 there. Feet higher.
Okay, I'm gonna take the next stab, because this is, I'm probably not going to laugh at this, because it's starting to get slightly malevolent. Manifest Destiny began as a rationale for westward expansion by white settlers in the 1850s. It was tied up with claims of white intellectual and technological superiority and professed a God-given mandate for white people to wipe out or subjugate indigenous people. I think that wipe out or subjugate, you know that at least in one case, the Hopi, who were a settled agrarian tribe, invited the quote unquote white colonialists in to protect them from, I believe, it might have been the Navajo or the Apache. I'm not up on my native geography of the time. But anyway, they were asking them, or Comanche actually, they were asking them to come in and protect them from one of the more warlike tribes who would, you know, come in, raid, loot, pillage, and rape. And they kept doing that, and they were like, you know what, could you cavalry come in here and just protect us from them? So at least in one part of the U.S., the white man was invited in to protect a more settled American, Native American tribe from more warlike Native American tribes. So, I mean, I don't know if that's true about everywhere. Probably isn't. But then the other thing is that progress sucks. Pretty much for everyone. Because guess what? White people had their turn 2 millennia ago when the Latins rolled through Northern Europe and did the same thing. And they did it, and they were successful, partly for the same reason that the Hopi invited the U.S. cavalry in. Because there were a lot of settled agrarian tribes who were tired of being ass-raped by the hooligans, the nomadic hooligans who came in and would constantly raid them for shit. So they said, Romans, come in, sort of establish some peace.
Use that brand new shiny stuff you've got. Metal, yeah. That's it. Well, they did have, they had gold in the North Americas before Europeans got here. I think that was the only metal they had, right? And it's not super good at anything that steel is good at.
And the thing is that this is just the process of human civilization. And if you don't like it, then feel free to kill yourself, because if we hadn't progressed this far, you probably wouldn't be alive. We would be at about maybe 100 million. So, you know, it sucks, but it is what it is. It be what it be. Okay.
It do.
It do what it do. And I, for one, thank the Latin assholes who raped my ancestors for several generations until they became one of the biggest banking empires in the Middle Ages and the Enlightenment. I'm Dutch, by the way. Okay, manifest destiny. Thinking, okay, as I use the term, is the notion of human separation from and domination over other species and elementals. What?
Elementals?
Elementals?
Yep, this is a thing now, apparently. We are in the deep fantasy universe.
They mean like tornadoes? Like wind elementals and shit?
Yeah, they mean like D&D elementals, like earth, air, fire, and water, I guess. Unless they're doing the Chinese elements, in which case, you know, there's like metal and wood and stuff like that.
What you mean materials and elements?
Yeah.
Elementals are forces, elementary forces with some kind of consciousness. That's I'm pretty sure that's what the definition of that word is. But I could look it up and find out for sure.
This is an academic paper. This is what they do. They add like suffixes where they don't belong to create new words.
Universally,
this doesn't sound posh.
An elemental is any magical entity who embodies or personifies a force of nature.
There you go.
Yeah.
Magic.
I either we're dealing with like some of these new age idiot people, or they are just suffixing words to sound smart.
Indigenous sciences and other epistemologies have always been central to salmon, river, and watershed governance in the Pacific West, though settler science has often erased contributions of that knowledge. Do you mean that they farmed this stuff? Like they exploited what the beavers were doing in order to feed themselves? Because I think that would probably be the more accurate interpretation of that.
I'm fascinated to know what they mean by indigenous sciences.
Oh, because, they probably...
Because science is very much an Enlightenment invention, isn't it? We called it natural philosophy before we actually sat down and said, hey, we actually need to measure things so we can predict, rather than... I mean, they had technology. I guess that's what they mean. Indigenous technology. Which, that still doesn't make sense.
Well, either that or it's the voodoo man conjuring lightning. At this point, I'm open to anything.
Any project to reconfigure watershed governance in a mode that resists manifest destiny's ongoing domination requires that I and other non-indigenous scholars take seriously indigenous epistemologies and the sovereignties in which they are rooted. I characterize large dams.
Give back. So basically you want to just, this is just kill Whitey. If we can get nature to kill Whitey for us, then hey, that's even better.
Yeah, it's like karmic good.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting from this.
We'll raise an army of beavers to destroy humanity.
Wow, this got a lot less fun.
How beavers destroy civilizations. There we go.
Beaver fest destiny.
Use that.
I mean, that once the judgmentalism starts marching, is, you know, initially this is sort of just like this funny eccentric romp into craziness, but now the judgmentalism starts, and then it starts to sound consistent with all kinds of other wartime propaganda against groups that you don't like, and then it just becomes sinister. I characterize large dams and levee projects of the 20th century as manifest destiny projects, among other extractive industries. In this article, in conversation with indigenous, decolonial, and feminist scholars, I trace several ways that manifest destiny and its infrastructural legacies disrupt relations among humans and other species, imposing disproportionate burdens on indigenous, non-white, and poor communities. Finally, I explore how queer and trans disruptions of manifest destiny thinking and the legacies might contribute to decolonial projects.
where the fuck did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking the same
they just got to tack it on somewhere, haven't they? Jesus.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, ultimately, this is a religious order, so they have to bring in their religious judgment. Ugh, the beaver's forests were burning all around July and me that summer. Literally burning? Like, or were they burning in... We wondered what effects their future interventions might have on fire regimes.
Were you doing that while running away from the flames?
Okay, so the fire actually was literal fire. So the beaver's
fire elementals, don't forget.
Yeah.
Yes. The beaver's forests were burning in July, and we wondered what effects their future interventions might have on fire regimes. Well, but they were burning, so they obviously didn't have that much of an effect. At the same time, water scarcity debates in our home state of California zeroed in on technological salvation in the form of immense and static waterworks, including new large dams that were foreclosed, the possibilities of millions of beaver, salmon, humans, and what Donna Haraway would call their messmates. What? What are messmates?
The mess is like it's an army term, like the mess hall that they use for where the soldiers get together. Is that what they mean, or do they literally mean just mess, as in a bunch of shit mates?
In a move that contradicts and rejects the logics of these massive waterworks, the biologists we met in Washington relocate beavers to high mountain streams where they've been absent for nearly two centuries, hoping that they will build small leaky dams not subject to human control. With time, these dams... So, people were proposing these new large dams so that people wouldn't die. And in a move that contradicts and rejects the logic of these massive waterworks... Well, the logic of these massive waterworks is that people don't die of thirst. Yeah, it's like all of this moralizing exists in a goddamn vacuum.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Almost. Well, where do they touch with the reality of taking care of massive amounts of humans?
Well, humans don't matter. So, I think this might be that, what was it, environmental feminism or green feminism, which was the one which was like the feminism, which is like we all should go back to living in caves.
There is one. Environmental feminism. Let's find out. Hold on. Well, you guys do your thing.
I'll read more.
Yeah.
With time, these dams create pools and floodplain meadows that shelter juvenile salmon and release cool water downstream in the late summer. Methods developed by U.S. Forest Service biologists for live trapping and relocating families of beaver on the Methow River have traveled to the nearby Yakima River, where state biologists are collaborating with the Yakima Nation on a wide range of salmon recovery projects, and to six other rivers in Washington in trying to reverse the damage of 20th century river engineering projects. Human actors are entering into improvisatory.
Yeah, they've made up this word. Just pronounce it however the fuck you like.
By the way, yeah, that could be it. By the way, it's called ecofeminism.
Human actors are entering into supercalifragilistic expialidocious riparian relations.
What the hell's riparian?
This... I to repair things, I'm guessing.
Or is it riparian? You only eat ripe things.
With this animal that they often call an ecosystem engineer.
Oh no, apparently it is relating to or situated on the banks of rivers. It is a thing.
Okay, all right. Somebody went to the dictionary for that. Cool.
I Wikipedia. Did.
In an earlier, well, this guy, there's a person who wrote this also went to the dictionary for that. Could have just said riverside relations. In an earlier article, Cole and I, 2015, thought with these beavers about how regenerative cuts can open possibilities of transformation for a human engineer. Who yearns against the totalizing assumptions of the Anthropocene. Don, don, don. Hey, can you play that on the whatever that thing is, the harmonica?
I don't know. Can I?
Let's find out. The conception. That's good. Every time I say Anthropocene, do that. The conception of the Anthropocene.
I've just looked further down the page. They're about to use the word Cthulucene.
As a global phenomenon arose together with global climate models and is accompanying among the geophysicists who coined the term by the future of a single Anthropos. What? This assumption of universal humanity erases differences of race, class, culture, and different legacies of colonialism and capitalism. Of course, those legacies of colonialism end at 200 years ago. They don't look at anything prior to that. People in different places, or even way, way prior, when the Native Americans annihilated the original peoples of North America, which were the Aboriginals from Australia. Ugh. You know, it's almost like we're all human. This assumption of universal humanity erases differences of class, race, culture, and different legacies of colonialism and capitalism. People in different places bear unequal responsibility for changing the planet's surface and climate, and those who have contributed least to the greenhouse gas pollution bear the heaviest burden of changing climates, oceans, and ecological conditions. Indigenous, feminist, and anti-capitalist critics have responded with other understandings of the epoch with terms like Capitalocene and Cthulucene. The problem lies. Go ahead. That problematize a singular Anthropos, draw attention to capitalism as a driving force behind climate change, and pay attention to ways that changing climates affect indigenous and post-colonial territories. By the way, I'm going to translate this all to you. We need to start building ovens and shoving people in them. This is what this individual is saying. Like, honestly. And who's going to be the first to go? Everyone that they think is moral dead weight. And then everyone who they defended, who defended the moral dead weight.
I need a definition for Cthulucene. I need it. I'm looking.
You're looking.
Where did they, how?
Mike, you a Cthulucene. Cthulucene.
Ba-da, 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 ba-da. I can't bother with the guitar. It's that period of history where the Dark One came out of the ocean and brought about a...
No, sorry. It's not the ocean. It's the trans water body.
That's right. I can't.
So are the clouds. Clouds are the floating trans water body.
If I Google search Cthulucene,
water transforms. You know, it's the clouds. It's the icebergs. It's the ocean. It's on the water table, and it's also rivers. That's where the trans comes in.
Oh my god, I have to escape. So this is an academic paper.
Yes.
Paper. And I know only one person that's in social science that actually wants to change it. And that's Aiden. And I'm telling you, Aiden is not, she's not, it's not David and Goliath. This is like the worm versus the blob. I don't know that she's, this is, wow. Aiden, I feel for you. You have a lot of work to do. You have a challenge on your hands. This is ridiculous.
This is the tardigrade versus Andrea Dworkin's ass. You know what a tardigrade is? It's like microscopic.
It's a water bear.
Water bear, yeah.
Ickle tiny cute things.
Oh, yes, they're adorable. They should replace all humanities departments with tardigrades that have been sized up to human size. I think that'd be more sensible, actually. All right. In this article, Irene Coles and Mai's theory of a transfigured watershed body to bear on human beaver salmon encounters. You know, it's interesting, like this human beaver salmon trifecta, because, you know, beaver is, but then salmon is sort of like this hard, elongated, slightly wet object. So it's starting to, you know, maybe I'm just reading too much into this. Encounters at two salmon recovery sites in the Pacific West. A Kuruk-led project on the Klamath River and a citizen science agency collaborative project along the Beaverless Salmon Creek.
Oh, no.
And Russian River. These sites... Mm-hmm. These sites have different legacies of indigenous dispossession, resource extraction, hydrologic alteration, and salmon decline, resulting in different approaches to resource policy and tribal co-management. Both stories concern salmon recovery in the Pacific West, where humans or beavers have initiated collaborative projects to raise water tables, keep rivers from going dry, and improve salmon habitat. People's encounters with beavers in their ponds thick with salmon are inspiring them to change how they undertake habitat restoration and also spurring some to reconsider the proper task of human ecologists and engineers into a mode inspired by beavers themselves. However, these supercalifragilisticexpialidocious and perhaps unconscious gestures have a long way to go before they actually decolonize riverine relations. And how to affect that transformation? You know, there was something that Jonathan told me that he was really freaking out about. John's my husband, for anybody who doesn't know. Apparently, they've granted human rights to a river. Wondering if this individual was part of that.
What?
Citizenship to a river.
What?
Yeah.
Fucking Canada.
What?
This is in Canada? It wasn't in Canada?
No,
it was in the States? God damn it.
You guys aren't that...
It's California. It's not the real States.
It's okay, then.
Oh, well,
let me recapitulate that 2015 article briefly. Do we have to?
Can I just take a crack at what this is actually saying? Like,
aside
without
from
all of the bullshit waffle? Aside from, we must remove anything that is harmful. All I'm getting from this, through all of this waffle, is... humans have built things in and around rivers. Sometimes it's had long-lasting effects which were bad. Sometimes. And so what we need to do is to not do the bad things.
You could say exactly the same thing for bears. If you like salmon so much, then kill the bears. They keep eating them.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. During the time that people were, like, doing the whole we are building empires things, there were some structures which were built in unsuitable conditions. Yeah, and it's welcome to the history where sometimes they didn't actually know fully exactly what the impacts of some things would be. Like building a dam somewhere, having it so much water build up behind it that the pressure from the water starts causing earthquakes in the area.
How about this about our ancestors? Maybe they were trying to prioritize human life because that's what they were what they were evolved to do as an evolved organism. And they didn't really do things necessarily because they wanted to be immoral, but simply because it was the way that they understood the world. Yep. Sort of a recap of what Tildir has said. Okay. Let me recapitulate that 2015 article briefly, drawing on our queer trans experience on various fronts and thinking with Eva Hayward about transgender embodiment and becoming. Cole and I considered a body of water, for example, a river, which draws together all of the above and underground water in a watershed as like our own trans bodies. And also as a slippery double for the psyche of an Anthropocene engineer. So they just
this
fucking
is just nonsense.
Sentence.
This is just absolute, complete fucking nonsense. What you're talking about?
Stop it! Just stop.
What you have just said has made absolutely no sense in any capacity.
Oh no, it does. It does. It's actually really sort of sinister. So
everyone
saying...
here is stupider for having listened to you. May God have mercy on your soul.
Yes, precisely that. Okay, we work with rivers all the time. Rivers draw these things together. No, that's gravity, dumbass. That's how rivers work.
As our own trans, I think I know what they're saying. They're saying that the river is a metaphor for their change into the gender that they identify with, and they're getting away from their hated former self.
They're saying
also is a slippery double for the psyche of an Anthropocene engineer. So they're judging their former male bodies as being this sort of...
I'm still kind of intrigued to get what the fuck an Anthropocene engineer is. Because an Anthropocene is just something that relates basically to the geological age of humans. Really, that's it. So what, are you going to try and engineer that? Is that what you're trying to do? Just like, change the geology and how humans interact with it? Like, building shit? It just sounds like some nonsense that you've made up. Like, to try and give yourself some sort of title where you don't have one. Because this is what social sciences do. You just make shit up.
It's pompous. Ecology, ecological interventions, improving environmentalism have not improved by this relationship saying that I'm going to use beavers to transform my thinking about the environment, just like my trans experience from going from a man to a woman. Like, that doesn't add anything. It's not about you. You're not adding anything to this. You're just centering your own experience for no particular reason.
But my lived experience.
I mean,
I touched a beaver once.
If they beaver.
It wasn't mine. It was someone else's.
Okay. Why are there no examples? I mean, are there any examples in this? Like, this is, right now, there's no case studies, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, that's why I was just thinking, was you were saying that this is a metaphor in a fucking science paper. Why? What?
No, there's no need for it. There's absolutely no reason. In fact, this doesn't help anyone but the author.
Stop it.
Yeah, this help. Is like... Your science paper is not an avenue for getting attention to yourself. It's supposed to be there to help others. You know, case studies to explain why these interventions work and how people could replicate them. Maybe some little more attention on the goddamn beavers.
Maybe some actual objective measurements. Like, okay, take a river as a case study. Tell us if the water tables have changed from year to year. Tell us what the river flow is year to year and season to season. Document beaver colonies and the numbers of members. Try to estimate the salmon flow. There are some places which do have salmon... like gates where there are sort of man-made waterfall things and dams, but they put like a salmon run up the side of it, and some of those are able to capture the number of salmon going up them because they're really easy for them to go up, so they don't like jump and go back down again, sort of thing. I mean, these are all numbers that you could be using to make some sort of objective case here that when, say, this dam was put here, this area received an increase in XYZ or a decrease in XYZ. When a dam that was here, like a previous beaver dam, was removed, it resulted in these changes. You could do this, like, pretty objectively if you tried. But instead, we're just getting a load of this pseudo-philosophical twaddle.
Yep. And I don't think individuals like this really understand the nature of scientific research. It's about assisting the next person who wants to look at what you've done, maybe replicate it or use it for something. It's about being of service to others. You are being of service to yourself in this. Okay, Hayward's theory helps Cole and me think about how beaver modify landscapes differently from human engineers. Why would that help you? Why wouldn't measurement and analyzing, observing, field notes on what the beavers are actually doing. How does recontextualizing this based on your own personal experience of something help you understand beavers better? From human engineers and how human engineering might be transformed, we argue that thinking with beaver as stochastic transgressors against manifest destiny engineering projects could transfigure engineers' approach and river restoration. What if, rather than trapping beavers into service as ecosystem engineers, human emulated beavers' reshaping of water and land by creating porous boundaries between land and water and up and downstream by way of stick and mud, leaky, and temporary dams? Because that's dumb. The beavers are doing it. Let them do it.
Why are we going to take over the beavers' jobs? This is what they do naturally. If we really need to control these things this badly, you ever heard of things called locks? You know, they exist, and those are flood gates and things like that, which you can actually open and close. If it's really that necessary, these sorts of things can be done.
If an ecosystem requires beaver engineering, then put in beavers. If the goal requires human engineering, then use human engineers. Why would you need some sort of collaborative hybrid of the two? Unless you want to take away ecosystems from beavers and just use their what they do to just emulate it as a human, and then you don't have to deal with the beaver.
Apparently our dams aren't temporary enough. Our dams are too permanent.
Yeah, but
God forbid that people might need consistency. That there might be some things that rely on proper consistency as opposed to things which fall apart if there's a little bit of rain or ice or some shit like that.
You know what? I'm going to blame men for all this shit. Silence. You know why? Because we don't take girls and show them what is the underpinning of our reality. We don't take, you know, a 12-year-old girl and make her put tar down on a roof in the hot sun or work on a goddamn dam pouring concrete or laying brick. So women have an innate, intuitive understanding of the how would they put it for beavers engineering, that women don't have an innate understanding of what men know, that our society is fragile, it's hard work, and it could disappear. They have an understanding of that because they built it. Women don't. For some reason, women have this conception that they can infinitely destroy shit and it will just regenerate as if by magic. In fact, I would really appreciate if this individual would extend how she's trying to understand the beaver's subjectivity. How about you try to understand the man's subjectivity? The people who actually construct all of this for the people who derive the majority benefit from it and have the least cost. Now, have I pissed you off? Sorry, I'm just going to shut up now.
Yeah, like I said, this is another way we get electricity. Another way we're able to read this off this screen here and how you were able to write it and get this important message across to so many readers. Like, it's like you're saying, these are people who just think electricity comes out of beavers' asses.
Elementals.
Elementals.
They believe that houses, the housing elemental just sort of, whoosh, whoosh, and there's a house. The dam elemental. Or if they do connect it to men, it's only to blame them for shit. Never to, you know, appreciate the fact that men have constructed a society that allows this many human beings to exist. Never before has this been possible. But now that we have this modern science, even our poor people are rich. I mean, if you took a poor person in North America today and compared them to a king 2,500 years ago, indoor plumbing, heating, lighting, access to the world's knowledge, all available to poor people in North America, they actually have a higher standard of living than kings did two and a half millennia ago. Can we please appreciate our society for that? Can we appreciate our ancestors for that? Can we say, oh yeah, maybe they were a bunch of fucking chauvinists, or they didn't actually conform to our rarefied, mannered sensibilities when it comes to morality, because they were still dealing with tribalism of every stripe? Maybe we could just accept that they did something right. They got us to the point where we could actually stand on the society that they built and start articulating more complex, not even more complex, but more indulgent moralities, where we could start thinking about, okay, well, how can we help the people who aren't able to help themselves? You know, no. More of this. Remember, we could do this with beavers. We can appreciate beavers, but we can't appreciate our own ancestors. Anyway,
does
someone want to take over? I'm tired of my own voice.
I just want to say, it's no secret that I'm concerned with overpopulation. Not so concerned that I refer to other people as overpopulation deniers. I'm not that far in, but you know, I'm pretty sure there's such a thing as too many people. Once there's like 100 billion, we have to go, okay, maybe we should have done something. And you know, my solution is don't produce so many fucking people. See if you can just like not have quite so many children. I think that's a better solution than bashing down all the fucking dams and building ones out of mud and sticks and shit. Now, rather than destroying civilization, see if we can exercise some restraint here and there.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we can give people the option of not having children if they don't want any. Maybe we can give men the option of not having children if they don't want any. Maybe we can refrain from shaming people who don't want children. Well, that's a completely different... Well, I suppose it's related, but... Mm-hmm.
Does someone else want to take over the reading?
Sure. Where were
okay.
we?
Okay. Oh, my God.
I lost my place.
I know, I come to understand.
I was still looking at Cthulhuine. Trying to like
I was being sarcastic when I said I would blame men, by the way.
And then I got stuck on ecofeminism because I looked it up on Wikipedia and I find that it's part of a series of perspectives that all sound really ridiculous and makes me wonder why are we politicizing the environmental science anyway, such as eco-capitalism, eco-nationalism, eco-socialism. How do these even work together? The green left, green liberalism, green libertarianism, and green Zionism. I'm not even going to go there, but okay. So anyway.
Wait, where's green Muslimism?
I don't see it there, but green politics does cover social justice.
If you've ever been out to their countries, they don't have an environment.
They don't have a lot of green.
They used to. It's all sand now. I guess that someone must have turned all the greenery into sandery somewhere along the lines.
Well, probably prior to Islam, though. So
yeah, probably. With the Babylonians and shit. All right.
Yeah. Okay, so we're at
the problem is six? their environment became beaverless.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's the kind of destruction that it can roll.
You heard it here on Honey Badger Radio.
No, perhaps it's
the
just
problem. The problem with the Middle East is that they are beaverless.
Yes,
beaverlessness. Stamp out beaverlessness.
Either that, or they're just covering the beavers up, and we can't see them.
Yep.
They're hidden.
They're trapping the beavers. They're trapping the beavers in layers of gauzy black trappery. All right.
So page six.
Oh my fucking God. Nobody noticed that pun.
Right, I got it. Six. No, I got it.
Such an approach would undermine.
It was hilarious. Such an approach would undermine the thinking behind 20th century water engineering projects that diverted water from streams and wetlands to irrigation ditches and pipelines, benefiting settler agriculture and expanding cities at the expense of flowing rivers. Now, as settler descendants increasingly collaborate with tribes on beaver projects, do these collaborations make decolonizing moves? I think they do, if non-indigenous scientists and residents recognize that these rivers remain integral to indigenous economies and cultures, and that tribes in salmon country have always been the most stalwart defenders of flowing rivers and opponents of practices that degrade riverine habitats. To quote Eve Tuck and K. Wayne Young, decolonization brings about the repatriation of indigenous land and life, end quote. As my cases will show, settler descendant collaborators work for decolonization in some, but not all, beaver collaborations.
Oh, way to dehumanize. Look, we're all here in this fucked up mess together. Maybe we could put away the judgment and just start working together.
I'm getting the sense that this whole thing about the beavers, it's really just a cover up. This isn't really, it's a distraction. This isn't about beavers. This is about people and how much this person thinks that people shouldn't do the things they do to live in the comfortable society we live in, and that we should live like hunter-gatherer societies or something.
I'm starting to think it's part of the noble savage thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, no, we should all live as the Native Americans because they are the peaceful people who are all communed with nature and...
Yes, they found ways to coexist and use the beaver's dams without building their own.
Yeah, it's like, yes, every human did this before civilization. It's called living outside. Okay, the reason that we came up with civilization was because it makes things better.
Actually, the reason why we came up with civilization was, though, that women stopped dying so much.
Yeah, it's everything just became better. We had better access to food and supplies and shelter and, you know, all of this really, really useful stuff. This seems to be causing some problems nowadays, what with the whole building up rather than outwards thing and cramming more people into ever smaller spaces, but
improvements can be made to the way we do things. Bringing, you know, introducing more beaver into habitats where they can do their beavery things. That, I have no problem with that. What I have a problem with is the judgment. Mm-hmm. The sheer amount of religious pomposity in this. Like, it's just, that doesn't help anyone. And it, in fact, makes it sound less like it's about the beaver and more like it's about your particular religious moral framework that, surprise, surprise, has you on top and everyone below you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just keep going, because okay. I think this becomes clear very shortly.
Yes. Cole and my argument's first main thrust is a trans theory of watershed embodiment, that changing engineered landscapes into beavered ones could realize the watershed's many bodily potentials. Our other thrust, you shouldn't be saying thrust and beaver in the same paper.
But I think that it's intentional at this point, because it's other, a trans woman who's talking about beaverless environments.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Our other thrust into trans theory argues against naturalizing arguments that trans and queer are not transgressive, where queer is a not yet here, trans, as we theorize it, is a collective mode or move to negotiate gendered movement through society that can accommodate many evolving expressions and categories of being. These negotiations take place within trans theory over the definition of trans, over its unmarked whiteness and debt to women, and queer of color theories, and over its decolonial potentials.
What the fuck are they talking about? What are they talking about? I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. You're a little low there, Mike.
I don't know how many intersections I just crossed into, but there's a lot. Far of
too many.
5D intersections here. 5 intersections here. Okay.
I'm trying to turn on the feminist theory part of my brain, because I've just read so fucking many of these papers, I actually kind of understand, like, most of what they say. But this is just, this means nothing.
No.
Maybe
she's... There's word salad, and then there's this. This is like the idea of word salads, where you just put, you know, Captain Crunch and mustard greens and fucking, you know, some sriracha and yesterday's bacon and, like, just put all of it into a bowl. Yeah, maybe some newspaper and some... jacks, you know, like for when you play jacks, because you don't have anything, you only have a couple of them, and like a d4, and that is your, and then you eat that. That's what this is.
Let's read it again.
You know, maybe you open up some ibuprofen or crush it down and put it in there. I don't know.
These negotiations take place within trans theory, over the definition of trans, over its unmarked whiteness and debt to women in queer color theories, and over its decolonial potentials.
So trans theory, so we're not talking about just the definition of transition, we're talking about the entire feminist theory of being trans, that you can go anywhere and do anything because biology don't reels and all that nonsense, over its unmarked whiteness. Okay, so trans theory is inherently white,
yes,
because apparently, presumably, most feminist scholars are white, and debt to women, and queer of color theorists, presumably because most of the women who have been working on this shit were white women, from the formation of women's studies and basically feminism in academia in the 1970s, when it was literally just created out of fucking nothing, basically as a PR stunt. And queer of color theorists, same thing. So So just a black theorist isn't in there. You have to be queer of color.
Mm-hmm.
And over its decolonial potentials. So trans theory is in fact a colonial agent that's not living up to its decolonial potentials because it is too white.
Yes.
Trans
theory.
Shit.
#trans theory too white.
Yeah, I knew I could decode this shit.
I think she actually does a little bit of that in the next right up here. So let's see here.
Are the thrust into trans theory argues against naturalizing arguments that trans queer are not transgressive. Hang on, I just want to check something.
Shall we continue reading?
Some white supremacy is showing through here. Is this not like trans is
yes
mainly a white thing, and we need to spread it to the whole world?
Trans theory is white supremacy because it's dominated by white trans people, I guess.
Yeah, so it needs to be changed. That's why it's not living up to its decolonial potentials, because it's too white.
Yeah.
So we need black trans
it's
theory.
It's racist, basically. It's too racist at this point.
Everything is racist.
Yes.
Other theory into trans, where queer is not yet here. And
what does this have to do with beaver impacts on the environment?
Literally nothing.
Except the fact that the argument is that colonization is the reason why the beaver environment is in danger or unable to coexist or work with humans, because we colonize things and we make things harder for beavers. So it's...
How does
we adapt the environment too effectively to ourselves, and sometimes it doesn't help animals.
How does anything in this paper help beaver?
And the indigenous people do it better.
Yeah, the indigenous people will help the beavers. I think that's why we need to move away from, you know, the white trans theory and all that stuff. Because if we just had, like, black and queer trans theory, and we used that instead of the white colonial patriarchy's way of, you know, conquering the environment and having dominion and controlling it. If we did this from, you know, the black queer trans perspective, then we wouldn't do that because, you know, you're raping the environment by doing it the cis white het way. So you need to use a decolonialized approach, which basically means temporary, really shitty things that don't actually work.
Okay.
I think.
How does this benefit beavers? What are the practical implications of this? How
because
do people intervene in a concrete way?
Won't build the big dams, which displace beavers and cause them problems.
Yeah, they build the
big dams so people like this can sit in their goddamn air-conditioned offices, drink their goddamn water, and write bullshit. Like, does she think that somehow she's going to continue to be doing this shit if we're in a situation where we're basically hunter-gatherers? Like, no!
I have to wonder, like, what level of society they would hope to maintain without any impact being made on the environment at all. I mean, I'd hope that they're not stupid enough to basically say humanity needs to give up doing anything that impacts the environment in some way, because that would be stupid. I've got to try and give them the benefit of the doubt here that they would still want, you know, people to live in towns and have like internet access, power, and all that stuff. But I think they're just trying to sort of say we should do things in more eco-friendly ways. Like, I'm really trying to give them the benefit of the doubt here that that's what they're saying. They're just saying it in a really stupid way.
They don't give anyone else the benefit of the doubt. They don't give people who are making the dams, the men who are making the dams, the benefit of the doubt that if they could do it in a more eco-friendly way, they would. I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt that most people don't make things destructive unless there's some other reason why. They don't have the power to make it less destructive. They're going to lose profit, which means you got to look at the shareholders then, which most likely are majority female or at least equally female. You know, there's pressures on people. And if they were able to create something within those pressures that was that had less of an environmental impact, they would do it.
Yeah, okay. Why do you think people are now trying to do the whole solar, tidal, and wind
Exactly.
Or people who live in those live in those really, really small houses, you know?
Yeah, they're cool, but
what do they call them? Mini houses or something? Tiny house?
Yeah.
Tiny houses. Yeah.
Okay, let's continue though, because I think that we'll get to decolonization and then call it a day.
All right. In activist and feminist spaces, debates over whether masculine or non-binary identified people can claim trans and feminist, discussions of hierarchies of oppressions along gender and race lines, and generational differences over pronouns and categories abound, and all of them are useless. These debates are crucial and inform my evolving understanding of trans political potentials within and beyond identitarian concerns. However, I will not delve further into these conversations here. Instead,
good.
Yeah, well, she says when she's on page 7 of God knows how many. I mean, if she talked about this rather than like beavers and rivers and Cthulhu and shit, I'd make more sense of it. But instead, I focus on the transgressiveness of trans as embodied by those who, because of political identities or gender expressions at odds with established queer trans categories, will never assimilate.
I think the problem is people are transing just to other kinds of humans. People just need to trans into beavers.
Yeah.
Did I call it earlier? Point. Everyone needs to be beaverkins because it's so anthropocentric, like identifying as a different kind of human.
In articulating,
let me throw in a new conversation about trans. The sort of transubstantiation. According to the dictionary in Google. The conversion of the substance of the Eucharist elements into the body and blood of Christ at consecration, only the appearances of bread and wine still remaining. You wonder why I'm adding this in. I'm just saying that, you know, there has been a lot of trans conversation in religious circles. This is just an extension, a transference of the concern over trans into a new religious orthodoxy. Okay, continue. I'll step off my podium. Confused everyone, go on.
Trying to figure out where I was. In articulating this particular embodied trans politics, this spirit of always crossing that can animate riverine politics through reciprocal engagements with beavers, I aim to sketch out a trans potential for scientists and others who work for watershed recovery but do not necessarily identify as queer or trans. I want to explore what such people's taking up of trans moves or trans politics might do for watershed science and for trans theory. I bring Cole and my concept of the watershed body back to specific encounters between salmon advocates and beavers to further explore whether and how river activists might translate physical transsexual survival techniques into psychological trans species survival invitations, finding some way to follow the practice of Hayward's trans figures who create embodiment by not jumping out of our bodies, but by taking up a fold in our bodies, by folding or cutting ourselves and creating a transformative scar of ourselves.
What?
These are the modern religious, okay?
Somebody wrote this for college and they got graded and it's up on a page. This is what happens.
I'm telling
you. This is what happens when you let anybody go to college.
I'm telling you, this is the modern religion. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
This is the modern religion. Our society has progressed so far that we can allow people to sit in a fucking room and contemplate things like transubstantiation, and what is this? Translate physical transsexual survival, trans species. Yeah, we have come so far as a civilization that we can allow people to do this shit.
And now they're talking,
ironically.
I think they're talking about living sacrifices at this point. You need to rend your flesh. You need to sacrifice your wine and your bread to the god of trans. Carry on.
Because that will make the rivers flow again.
That will do something good for the beavers.
One more decapitation and the eclipse will end.
I still don't know what the practical, like, wouldn't a set of case studies, some practical advice and interventions to help beavers You know, maybe some statistics on how those interventions help, you know, so stuff like that. Something that someone could read and say, hey, oh yeah, I want to help the beaver take over this landscape and make it their own. What do they need? Do I need to plant particular types of trees or underbrush? Do I need to make sure that invasive species are removed? You know, do beaver do well with deer?
The answer is no.
Okay.
You know, what they do, they come in, they block off our nice river flows that we use for drinking, they flood areas of our land and waste hooves, and because of the shape of those, we get mold in between them. And that's not pleasant.
As a panda, I love beavers, but I couldn't eat a whole one.
Oh, okay, continue, Brian.
Okay. As far as I have been able to discover, few of these beaver advocates identify with trans theory or ally themselves with, or even are, trans people. Nonetheless, it seems useful to ask whether their actions and discourses may be read as transformations of the watershed body, how deeply the watershed body may be transformed, and when this transformation might undermine the manifest destiny thinking and support decolonial projects. The idea of a watershed body, which comes into being through relations along its multi-species inhabitants and the landscapes and weather systems that shape them, is also in conversation with Haraway's notion of becomings with more than human others and Barad's notion of phenomena as agential interactions among these constituents.
Just keep going.
All right. I draw out these and other resonances with feminist, queer, and indigenous theory below and in a forthcoming companion article. First, I consider what decolonizing ethics may emerge in the contact zone where queer, trans, and indigenous theory meet. Beavers are not necessarily resistant to co-optation, into manifest destiny projects.
We've got another casualty.
You've
discovered what's interesting about this. You read this, and you actually it gets the phlegm flowing. It's transforming, you know, your lungs into. It gets the movement.
Transformative. Beavers are not necessarily resistant to co-optation into manifest destiny projects. Rather, they are good to think with or about how or whether a project might enact a decolonizing ethic. I then travel with the beavers to the Klamath River and Salmon Creek, tracing how their presence and absence have reshaped my own engagements with trans and queer theory and ecological science.
God damn it, the beavers are too neutral. They might work for anyone. We need the beavers on our side. Those evil cis white oppressive men might get the beavers to do something for them that might benefit them. They could put the dam in the wrong place. And then someone might put a little lake by the cabin with a boathouse. And before you know it, the people will come in the summer and rent jet skis and shit. God damn those beavers facilitating the rise of capitalism.
You know, someone could do a dramatization of this very paper, at least what we've read so far, and do like mock filming of a woman person traveling through, you know, Klamath River and Salmon Creek, hanging out with beavers, and then hanging out in places where there are no beavers, and taking notes studiously with the tongue out, you know, when you're writing and you're really into it like a kid. And have this being sort of...
Like day six, the beavers have accepted me as one of their own.
Yeah, exactly. It's got like a tail attached to the back. I have blended in. I have become their chief. And it would be the funniest thing ever, even though it's based on something totally serious. It would be the best thing that SNL had ever done.
Oh my God. Like, this basically lays out the entire paper as essentially about herself. She's made ecology and beavers... And ecological
beds and salmon and bears and human beings and colonization, all about herself. Yes,
it's all about her.
Other feminists that weren't doing it right about her.
All about her. It's all about her. And to no one's benefit but her own. And this is considered to be science. Not just science.
Technoscience.
Oh, should we go for
space pants?
Did we get any super chats? See,
Yeah, we did. I'll go ahead and read them for you. There was a few, I forgot about those. Okay. First, French Honey Badger gave us $5 and says, this was earlier, if you want to conserve resources, land, and avoid pollution, privatize everything and follow 100% capitalism. Karan Strong gave us €2 and says, do beavers dream of electric stick? The Happy Madman gave us $2 and says, you're all bigots. This is probably true. Joey Jojo gives us $2 and says, what the fuck is this paper even? In all caps with one question mark. So he felt strongly about it, but not crazy strong. And French Honey Badger gave us another $5 and says, states own dams. They have no incentives to use resources properly. They should be held accountable. That's, you know what? Maybe you should look into eco-capitalism, because I saw that was on the list of various other eco things under eco-activism. So we'll see what they have to say. That those are the super chats, though.
All right. Well, I don't... I feel like there's more to this, but less also.
I think there's a lot more words. There's a lot of
words. There's another 20 pages. We're on page 8 of 28.
Oh my God. I just saw something that sucked me in. Our second multivocal beaver performance took place at the Dimensions of Political Ecology Conference on a panel Julie Cole and I organized called Latent Destinies, Manifest Reversals. That this time we explicitly theorized beavers as agents working to overturn manifest destiny. You know what? I'm making an executive decision, which is probably colonizing shit, but I don't care. I think we'll continue this in the after show. And if you want to join us, www.patreon.com/honeybadgerradio, because that seems too juicy.
Join us in the after show to find out what the Beaver Believer movement is.
Yes, and what exactly Cole meant by the multivocal beaver performance.
Okay. Shall I do? Shall I take us out?
Yes, trans us into the transmutation of transcendental, translytical, trans.
Excuse me.